The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
All right, Hugh Hewitt, welcome to the Rundown, which consists of the pre-rundown, the rundown, and the post-rundown, but all of it brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show, at the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement. And I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. With that in mind, let's get to the pre-rundown rundown. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt. Glad to have you with me this morning. I think you know that I believe that the purpose of life is to be happy, and that's best achieved by a good relationship with God. But many people can define their own happiness, whatever they want. It usually doesn't include being sick or dead. And so I'm a big proponent of getting vaccinated because yesterday in the United States, 383 people died of COVID-related illness. COVID was a comorbidity, meaning that but for COVID, they would have been alive. That's down from January 20th when 4,396 people died. So we've done pretty well. We're pushing down the number of deaths in the United States because of COVID. And that's good. The reason we are doing that is because we've improved therapeutics. All right. So we have got a lot better way to treat people. We're figuring out things like ivermectin might work very well. We're figuring out therapeutics that remdesivir and other things work, but the best thing is not to get it at all, right? So not to get it all means getting a vaccination. And in the United States, we're doing pretty well with that. We vaccinated 107 million people, have got at least one shot. That's 32.4% of America. And 18% of America, including yours truly, have had two shots in 2 weeks, meaning we've got as much immunity as possible. So I'm jumping on an airplane Saturday. I'm not flying woke. I'm not flying on Delta, and I'm not flying on United. I won't fly woke if I have a choice. I'll fly woke if I have to fly woke, but I'd rather fly normal. Because if an airline is too busy worrying about how they appear on social media, they're not fixing the wheels, and they're not maintaining the service, and they're not making sure that I get from A to B. So I'm not flying woke this weekend, and I hope you don't fly woke either. And I'm not watching... I have not sworn off baseball. I just can't get over it yet. I'm not going to buy any tickets and I'm not going to buy any merch, but I just don't care. I mean, Rob Manfred really broke the sport for me because sport is supposed to be about sport. I'm going to have to wait for football and hope that, you know, I never got upset when players knelt. Football, that's an individual freedom. But baseball declared itself woke this week, and I'm waiting for Rob Manfred to come out today and say he's not going to Augusta because he's newly woke. And he's not going to Georgia because Georgia is a bad place. And Augusta, which is like the birthplace of white privilege, he's not going to go to Augusta. And it's a male privilege, Me Too place. And he's not going to go there. And he's not going to put up with tokenism in Major League Baseball. I mean, the number of players who are minority in Major League Baseball, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's a lot. A lot of Latinos, a lot of African Americans. Not many women playing baseball as far as we know, but they've got women umpires. And they're doing their best. But Augusta is really the most retro place in the world. So Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball who pulled the All-Star game out of Georgia, he really can't go to Augusta. He should resign his membership. So I'm waiting on that. But in the meantime, while we wait for woke developments, this is a very unwoke thing for me to say. Get vaccinated because you don't want to die. Now, that, you say, oh, well, I know there are some skeptics out there. This is not rocket science. 383 people died yesterday. 4,308 people died on January 20th. What's the difference? Vaccinations. Vaccination are killing off the target population. It's not spreading as far and as fast. We're going to get to herd immunity after another month or so, and you need to get vaccinated. And some of you are reading weird stuff. Some of you are going into the internet and you've educated yourself, which is always kind of dangerous. And you think you've read somewhere that it changes your DNA and gives you a sixth finger. That's not true. And your head begins to swivel around and you expel green stuff. That's not true. It's just a vaccination like the polio vaccine, like the measles vaccine. It's good for you. Don't become an anti-vaxxer. They are not science people. They are crazy people. They live in fear. Live in hope, live happy, and live long. Get your 3 score and 10 years. You're actually 3 score and 18 years is the average lifespan. Don't die on a ventilator. Don't die alone in a hospital. Just go get vaccinated. Now, it is not, it's run by the government, so it is not the easiest thing in the world to run. But you can try the private sector things, which brings me to Ron DeSantis. They tried to take out Ron. You know, Ron DeSantis is the least woke governor in America. And so the media hates him. He's also among the likeliest of people to be president after Joe Biden stops being not president. That means in 2024, the front runners are Ron DeSantis, Mike Pompeo, and Tom Cotton. They just are. They're the three most Trump people not named Trump. And those are the three most likely people to be president. And so they're going to methodically go after each of them. We're going to talk to Tom Cotton at the bottom of the hour. And they're going after Ron DeSantis. Allegedly because he did a deal. Well, let's play the 60 Minutes cut. I don't have my cut sheet in front of me. Dwayne Whitten sent it to me today. But I have a cut of 60 Minutes going after Ron DeSantis on Sunday night. Can we play that?
Governor DeSantis about the deal, but he declined our request for an interview. We caught up with him south of Orlando.
Publix, as you know, donated $100,000 to your campaign. And then you rewarded them with the exclusive rights to distribute the vaccination in Palm Beach.
So first of all, that, what you're saying is wrong.
How is that not pay to play?
That's a fake narrative. I met with the county mayor. I met with the administrator. I met with all the folks at Palm Beach County. And I said, here's some of the options. We can do more drive-through sites. We can give more to hospitals. We can do the Publix. And they said, we think that would be the easiest thing for our residents.
But Melissa McKinley, the county commissioner in the Glades, told us the governor never met with her about the Publix deal.
The criticism is that it's pay to play,
Governor. It's wrong. It's a fake narrative. I just disabused you of the narrative, and you don't care about the facts because obviously I laid it out for you in a way that is irrefutable.
Well,
it's clearly not.
Isn't there the nearest
no,
Publix?
No, you're wrong. You're wrong.
Away.
You're wrong. Yes,
That's
sir.
That's actually a fact.
The CBS reporter, whose name I do not know, is manipulated by her producer that wants to make a headline. They want to make Ron DeSantis a pay-to-play governor. And Publix, if you don't know, is a grocery store, as far as I can tell. I'm not a Florida guy, so I don't know. And there are lots of them, and they decided to give out the vaccine through Publix. It's working well. So they developed a premise. Publix gave Ron DeSantis $100,000 for his campaign. So let's make Ron DeSantis a bad guy and prove that he gave Publix the opportunity to distribute the vaccine in order to pay back his contributor. Now, number one, $100,000 is nothing in a Florida campaign. It just is nothing. Number two, here's his real answer, which CBS 60 Minutes did not play for you.
So first of all, what you're saying is wrong. That's a fake narrative. So first of all, when we did the first pharmacies that had it were CVS and Walgreens, and they had a long-term care mission. So they were going to the long-term care facilities. They got vaccine in the middle of December. They started going to the long-term care facilities the third week of December to do LTCs. So that was their mission. That was very important, and we trusted them to do that. As we got into January, we wanted to expand the distribution points. So, yes, you had the counties, you had some drive-through sites, you had hospitals that were doing a lot, but we wanted to get it into communities more. So we reached out to other retail pharmacies, Publix, Walmart. Obviously, CVS and Walgreens had to finish that mission, and we said we're gonna use you as soon as you're done with that. For the Publix, they were the first one to raise their hand, say they were ready to go. And you know what? We did it on a trial basis. I had three counties. I actually showed up that weekend and talked to seniors across four different publics. How was the experience? Is this good? Should you think this is the way to go? And it was 100% positive. So we expanded it, and then folks liked it. And I can tell you, if you look at a place like Palm Beach County, they were kind of struggling at first in terms of the senior numbers. I went, I met with the county mayor, I met with the administrator, I met with all the folks at Palm Beach County, and I said, here's some of the options. We can do more drive-through sites. We can give more to hospitals. We can do the Publix. We can do this. They calculated that 90% of their seniors live within a mile and a half of a Publix. And they said, we think that would be the easiest thing for our residents. So we did that. And what ended up happening was you had 65 Publix in Palm Beach. Palm Beach is one of the biggest counties, one of the most elderly counties. We've done almost 75% of the seniors in Palm Beach. And the reason is because you had the strong retail footprint. So our way has been multifaceted. It has worked. And we're also now very much expanding CVS and Walgreens now that they've completed the long-term care mission. Yes. And it's wrong. It's wrong. It's a fake narrative. I just disabused you of the narrative, and you don't care about the facts because obviously I laid it out for you in a way that is irrefutable. And so it's clearly not. No, no, no. You're wrong. You're wrong.
You see, Harvard Law School teaches you how to argue. That's why Tom Cotton, Mike Pompeo, and Ron DeSantis are the leading candidates for president, because Harvard Law School teaches you how to take CBS apart. CNN, 60 Minutes faces backlash. New York Post, Democratic Florida mayor slams 60 Minutes. I just wish Piggly Wiggly had been what they used. Because if I could have heard Ron DeSantis say Piggly Wiggly 10 times, or CBS say Piggly Wiggly 10 times. And if you don't know what Piggly Wiggly is, you've never been to South Carolina. But wouldn't it have been great if he'd done the deal with Piggly Wiggly? That would have been better. CBS, what a bunch of liars at 60 Minutes. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt. The date was July 12, 1974. I had graduated from high school and was preparing to go out to college. I didn't even know it happened. I was 18 at the time. I was born in 1956. July 12th, 1974, you're thinking to yourself, oh, wait a minute. Nixon resigned in August. He's not talking about Nixon. No, I'm not talking about Nixon. I'm talking about the Congressional Budget and Impoundment Control Act of 1974. Now, that is a killer, right? You are right now, your hand is reaching for the button. Or you're about to tell Alexa, Alexa, play Dennis Prager. Don't do that. That would be terrible. Or you're about to, if you've got a 1955 Pontiac, you're about to turn the radio dial. But listen to me. Give me a second. The Congressional Budget and Impoundment Control Act of 1974 became law on July 12, 1974. And Congress changed the United States fiscal year from July 1 to October 1. And they set up a process known as reconciliation. And the idea was every year the president would send in his budget or her budget in about this time of the year. Biden hadn't done it yet. President Biden's been preoccupied. Dogs biting everyone. He'd been upset. And so the budget comes in, and then the Senate and the House budget committees pass their budget, and then they reconcile them. And then they send instructions off to the various subcommittees of Congress. This is how much money you have to spend, for example, on armed services or the Appropriations Committee. And here are some instructions on what you may or may not do. And here's what we're going to do for spending overall. We're going to spend this much money and we're going to tax this much. And that was done once a year since 1974. So for 48 years, it's run that way. 48 years. There's been one Budget Reconciliation Act a year, and that act is not subject to the filibuster. So all you need is 50 votes plus the vice president, 51 votes. The Democrats have 50 votes in the Senate. Don't need 60 votes. And so the first thing that Chuck Schumer did was pass, was it $3 trillion? I've lost track. It's $2 trillion. Was it $3 trillion or $2 trillion? We've lost track. We are now anesthetized to the trillion. I think it was $2 trillion. First thing he passed was a $2 trillion, $1.9 trillion bill. And that money wasn't paid for. No one's taxes went up, nothing. He just borrowed it. And I began by telling you about the national debt clock. You know, the borrowing of that right now is at $28 trillion in change. And $28 trillion is a lot, but it's going to go up $2 trillion because Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi agreed just to borrow it. And we thought, okay, we're safe for a year. All they did was spend $2 trillion. We can repair that when Biden leaves and a Republican comes in. Well, yesterday, the Senate parliamentarian ruled for the first time in 48 years that you can do as many budget reconciliations as you want per year. Now, the rule is you can only do taxing and spending in a budget reconciliation. You can't pass H.R. 1, which would give the vote to plants, and you cannot... you can't raise the minimum wage to $150 an hour. These are all Democratic proposals, as you know. You can't make AOC royalty. You can't do anything that's not related to spending and budget. But you can spend more money than we've got and just print it. Or you can tax everything that moves. And in the first reconciliation that went through, nothing was taxed. It was just all free money, very inflationary. And that's why the 10-year Treasury has crept up repeatedly since we got there. It's crept back up. I'm trying to figure out where it is now by looking on my ever-ready CNBC pre-market thing. But Dwayne broke Google Chrome for some reason. I don't know why it's not working, but it isn't. I'll look on this. And so we have a 10-year treasury of around 1.6, something like that. And, yeah, it's at... I do not know why my screen keeps resetting to the bottom of the screen. Dwayne, why did you break this? I leave for 5 minutes and he breaks the screen. So I can't tell you what the 10-year treasury is. Just give me a second here and I'll look it up. The 10-year treasury is the interest rate on which all interest rates are based. And it really tells you the state of the economy. And the 10-year treasury this morning is at, we're looking. Oh, there it is. 1.72%. It ticked up. It went up a little bit because money became more expensive because money's being printed at an alarming rate. And so your 30-year interest rate for your home loan went up just a bit. I was down at andrewandtodd.com yesterday watching them work because everybody in the country is either buying a house or refinancing a house. And andrewandtodd.com is where they do that, 888-888-1172. They're lenders. If you want to call them, that's a free giveaway to andrewandtodd.com. But they were working around the clock. Talk about a sweatshop. They're happy. I mean, they're like the seven dwarfs. Ah-ho, hi-ho, off to lend we go. And that's what they do at andrewandtodd.com, 888-888-1172. Well, yesterday the parliamentarian ruled that Chuck Schumer can pass another reconciliation bill and another, technically an amendment to the one that he passed, and then another one, and then another one, and then another one. And this is going to kind of shake the markets a little bit. We knew he had one more bite at the apple where they're going to raise corporate taxes and spend more money on infrastructure on a straight party line vote. 51 votes in the Senate, and they've got 325 to 315, I think, is the House, something like that, or 323 to 230, I don't know what the House is. It's five vote different. And so it's very close in both houses, an equally divided legislature, but the Democrats have the tiniest margin of error. One vote in the Senate, five votes in the House. And they're going to jam through another $3 trillion this year, and then another $3 trillion next year. And that national debt, which is at $28 trillion and 135% of the GDP, is going to go to $35 trillion. That's what's going to happen. What will that do? And so the Wall Street Journal headline is, Senate parliamentarian rules in favor of Democratic reconciliation effort. This is doom. This is advance word by Carrier Pigeon, by Pony Express, by The Matrix. Doom has arrived. We have taken all restraint off of a one-vote Democratic margin. Now, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema of West Virginia and Arizona, and I think Angus King, are rational about this. And Chris Coons is a smart guy, and he knows we can't do this either. So hopefully Chris Coons comes into the caucus and says, what are you guys, nuts? Have you looked at the debt? The debt is at 135% of GDP. It was at 55% of GDP 20 years ago. If we keep doing this, we will be Argentina in the 80s. We will be Weimar Republic. If you print that much money, and I explain it to you again in terms for the Steelers fans. If everybody in Pittsburgh has $5,000 and there are 100 cars in Pittsburgh, the most that anyone's going to pay is, you know, someone might pay $2,000 for it. Some Steelers fan might pay $5,000, but the amount of money is limited and the number of cars is limited. And so they'll find an equilibrium between what someone is wanting to pay and what they will pay. And other people will say, no, I'll go to Cleveland and get my car for $100. But the Steelers fans being slow, they won't figure it out. But the amount of money changes the price of the good. Because there are only 100 cars to buy, and if you increase everyone in Pittsburgh from $5,000 per person to $10,000 per person, then the car is going to probably double in price. It's just a basic law. If you give people more money, they will spend more money to get what they need. That's called inflation. So when the Democrats get to print as much money as they want, inflation is going to come and the interest rates are going to go up. Now, we have had an artificial hold on interest rates for a very, 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 very long time. Couple of years. The Fed has said they're not going to change that interest rate at all for a while, for a year and a half. So it's going to build up and build up and build up. And then when it's unleashed, it's going to be wild. It's just going to be what? So the Senate parliamentarian doomed us yesterday. Joe Manchin said he's not in favor of raising the corporate tax. They got to raise some taxes to pay for this, although they actually could just print the money, and they might do that. They might just print the money. Democrats just might say, we're going to spend $5 trillion and take the national debt to $32 trillion or $33 trillion or $40 trillion. Why not? They don't have a real good grasp on economics. The whole inflation thing eludes them. I have to get Brian Westbury on to explain it for Steelers fans and the Democratic Senate. They might spend $10 trillion. They might give everyone $2,800, like they just gave people $1,400. Why not? Why not print money? Joe Biden's over there saying, send me anything, I'll sign it. What am I doing here? And so they'll send over. It's a great deal for incumbent politicians. They don't have to pay the piper. But it used to be they could only do it once a year. Yesterday, the parliamentarian said you can do it as many times as you want. So you cannot give Hillary Clinton a royalty title. That might otherwise slip through. And you can't pay HR1. You can't do that. But you can spend as much as you want and tax as much as you want, as often as you want on 51 votes. And there was a shudder in the force yesterday. The force, there's a great disturbance in the force. It's always in the stuff you don't understand, the stories you don't read. Senate parliamentarian rules in favor of Democratic reconciliation effort. That sounds pretty normal, right? That's the headline. What the hell does that mean? That means we are going to spend like we have never spent before. And behind that comes inflation. And I remind you, the first house that the fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I bought in 1985, was 12.5% on a 30-year loan. 12.5%. I don't know. We were crazy. It's what you could do. You had to buy a house, right? Had a baby on the way, get a house. You got to find some space. 12.5%, what's that mean to a 27-year-old? You know, I don't know what 12.5% means. My dad thought I was nuts. Well, right now you can buy a house at andrewandtodd.com and you'll get a 3% loan, or maybe a 2.8, and maybe a 3.5, depends on your credit. This is going to be, you just better own property now. God forbid if you don't own property. I don't know what rents are going to do in this country. They can't build houses fast enough. I do not know what rents are going to do, because people, they're just going to charge what the market can bear. And we're going to print money, and then we're going to print some more money, and then we're going to print some more money. And you heard it here first. Time for my relieffactor.com. All right, that time of the day, I always take this regardless of the headache I've got. I just scared the heck out of all you people. Go out and buy a house and get some relieffactor.com and stay in shape, because you're going to have to live to 150 to pay off this debt. This is not my problem. This is my kid's problem and my grandkid's problem. Stone cold coffee. Thank you, Dwayne. I must tell you, relieffactor.com goes down so easy, you can take it with absolute stone cold coffee. And it doesn't matter. The Icarian, the Curcumin, the Resveratrol, the Omega, they taste great. You can't taste them. And down they go like that. And what do? They support the temporary relief of the minor aches and pains that come from exercise. And I'm going to have to walk a long way today because I woke up and saw that Baylor won and the parliamentarian ruled. And I said, the end of times is upon us. This is really Roman Revolution stuff. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. 51 minutes after the hour, America. That music means David M. Drucker's in the house from the Washington Examiner. Follow him on Twitter at David M. Drucker. Good morning, David.
Hey, good morning, Hugh.
The Senate parliamentarian, I have been trying to instruct the audience on what this means, and it means, you know, free money. That's all I could come up with. It just means that President Biden gets his infrastructure bill. Joe Biden gets any tax hike that he can get past Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, and we're in for massive deficits. How do you read it?
Well, that sounds like the most likely possibility. I think that the Democrats are going to have a little bit tougher of a time agreeing on this bill than they did on the first bill, COVID relief plus with a bunch of other stuff. There was an urgency about that because it was still built around the pandemic. This is a jobs plan, so-called, and it will, you know, theoretically lead to a lot of jobs if the infrastructure plans are built, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff built into this. I think the important thing to remember here that I have learned in almost 20 years of covering American politics is that there's no constituency for debts and deficits. There are no deficit hawks. American voters don't care, and that includes American voters of both political parties. They think they care, but what they really care is not allowing the other side to spend money they don't like. They are very much in favor of spending money they do like, and that's about the thick of it. And so Biden, I think, will have carte blanche, pending Democrats agreeing with themselves, to spend a whole bunch of money. I don't think American voters, by and large, will care if and until there are negative consequences. And one of the things we've experienced since Reagan took care of the last inflationary and high interest rate period we had is that even when we do overspend, and it hasn't been to this level, but even when we do overspend, a lot of the dire warnings about what's going to happen and turning into Greece or whatever country we're supposed to turn into, it's never happened. And I don't think American voters really think anything bad's going to happen. If something bad actually happens, they may change their mind on this. They may rediscover their deficit hawk roots, at least some voters. But I don't think you're going to see any complaints, really, if and until that happens.
I agree. I've been explaining to people today the national debt when Reagan took over was 55% of... Actually, when Reagan took over, it was 35% of GDP. So if we had $100 million GDP, we had a $35 million debt. It is now 130%. And nothing bad's happened, right? 1980 to 2020. For 40 years, we have been inflation-free. So people don't know what inflation does. But you and I both remember it because we bought houses during it. And it's a killer. And the question is, now that they've changed reconciliation, can the Democrats resist political pressure to just spend and spend and spend? There's a limit to the taxes, and Joe Manchin sets that limit. Yesterday he said he doesn't like 28%. He thought 25% sounded right. So that's what the corporate tax is going to, 25%. Joe Manchin gets to call all this stuff. But he'll also raise the highest income tax, right? I mean, they'll pass all sorts of taxes, but it won't make a lick of difference given this size of debt. And I wouldn't blame them. This is how Democrats get elected. They promise to spend money. That's what they do.
Right. You know, a Republican consultant once told me, or tells me regularly, that Republicans are put on earth to do a couple of things, and one of those things is to cut taxes.
Yes.
And Democrats, you know, this is old school Democratic politics, right? I mean, this is in some ways should be reassuring, I suppose, if you're a Republican who you know, blanches at full Democratic control of government. They're trying to spend a lot of money. They've been interested in spending a lot of money as long as I've been alive. Bill Clinton smartly renamed spending, relabeled investment. People like the sound of that.
Yep.
But this is nothing new. And coming out of a crisis, a pandemic, that upended the economy and everything else, people are inclined to look to government for help. And even if it makes them a little uncomfortable, they figure, hey, look, it is warranted. And whatever problems Joe Biden is going to have over the next few years, and I expect he'll have them, and he's already having some of them, I don't think any of it's going to have to do with his economic agenda, again, unless there, after 40 years, is finally, you know, some of these negative repercussions that conservative economists worry about.
Yeah, and I think it will first show up in housing costs, because right now people can't buy a house because there aren't enough houses. And so they run around. You've seen what's going on in D.C. It's going on the West Coast. It's going on everywhere. Austin, Texas. People cannot even get an offer in. And that's because there aren't enough houses and everyone's got money and more money is on the way. So, David Drucker, I just want a prediction from you. How many reconciliations do you think Chuck Schumer will pass now? Now he can do an unlimited number of 51 votes. He can't pass H.R. 1. He can't do any of the crazy social stuff, but he can raise taxes and he can increase spending via reconciliation with 51 votes. How high is the sky for him?
Well, the sky's the limit. And in particular, he doesn't want to have to worry about a Democratic primary in 2022. And so I think that, you know, and I think, you know, maybe a lot of your listeners will think I'm crazy, but Chuck Schumer was really a pretty pragmatic Democrat over the years, but he has embraced the liberal side of himself for no other reason, for self-preservation.
The sky is the limit. You heard it from David Drucker. Trust it. David M. Drucker on Twitter. I'll be back hour number two, straight ahead, America, on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you this. There has never been a more important time to protect your digital rights. That's why I and thousands of my patriotic listeners choose to secure our online data by using ExpressVPN. Do you believe that a VPN isn't for you because you can use the internet just fine without one? Anytime you go online, my friends, your internet service provider can see every site you are visiting. You think that VPNs are complex and only for tech experts? No, they're not. Trust me. With ExpressVPN, you launch the app, tap one button to protect yourself, and it's done. It's that simple. I trust ExpressVPN to protect my online data because they're rated number one by CNET and Wired, and they stand for my values. So now is the time for you to take a stance. Take back your privacy at expressvpn.com/Hewitt. You get 3 extra months for on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Hewitt to get 3 extra months free. Visit expressvpn.com/Hewitt right now. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt on a Tuesday. That means Byron York of the Washington Examiner joins me. Follow him on Twitter at Byron York. Watch him on Fox News. Good morning, Byron.
Good morning, Hugh.
You seemed in your newsletter to be awfully optimistic to me. Finally, some sanity on Georgia's voting law, question mark. Well, the answer is I don't think so. I really do not think so because do you know what Rob Manfred belongs to?
I have heard he belongs to Augusta National Golf Club.
Yes, he does. Now, this is the commissioner of Major League Baseball who pulled the All-Star game out of Atlanta because he didn't like the voting rights bill. And he belongs to, I mean, if you are going to have, if you believed in white privilege and you are going to have a meeting of the White Privilege Society and you would gather at one place in the United States, where would you go, Byron York?
Probably some exclusive neighborhood in Northwest Washington.
Well, that would be a good, but if you wanted to get away from Northwest Washington and you wanted to play some golf.
I know what you're trying to say.
You'd go to Augusta. Augusta is like the poster child for exclusive white male privilege with a few women and minorities thrown in to get the corporate sponsors off their back. And Rob Manfred belongs to it. And, you know, he's now reading. You think it's going to get better. It's going to get worse, Byron. Everyone's going to have to fight this out. Go ahead.
Okay. The reason I thought it might get better, I thought we have little green shoots of reason coming up, is that I've seen a couple of discussions on the internet in which people discuss the Georgia bill rationally. People who have some objections to some provisions of it, who think other provisions of it are good and think other provisions of it are completely, totally overhyped and not as important as they're presented to be. So I thought, well, that's huge progress. Now, the problem is the president of the United States, Joe Biden, is leading the irrational forces here. And you have this atmosphere of corporate fear that has taken place, not just with what Major League Baseball did, but Delta, Coca-Cola, two companies in Georgia, tons of other companies feeling that they have to be woke and issue a statement. I mean, United Airlines issued a statement on the importance of voting yesterday, and I'm thinking, why? Why are they doing this?
May I read that for the benefit of our audience? United Airlines, 19 hours ago, put out this statement. Our mission is to connect people and unite the world. We believe that one of the most effective ways to do this is to engage in the democratic process, which begins with voting, a vital civic duty. America's democracy is stronger when we're all engaged and every vote is properly counted. Some have questioned the integrity of the nation's election systems and are using it to justify stricter voting procedures, even though numerous studies have found zero credible evidence of widespread fraud in U.S. elections. Legislation that infringes on the right to vote of fellow Americans is wrong. We believe that leaders in both parties should work to protect the right of eligible voters by making it easier and more convenient for them to cast a ballot and have it counted, which is what I think Georgia did. But my question is, what conceivable reason does United Airlines have to put this out? Their mission is to connect people and unite the world. No, their mission is to fly me from L.A. to D.C. And now I'm not going to get on United. I'm going to get on Alaska because I don't want to fly a Democratic airline.
Well, you're going to run out of airlines at some point because you do have now Delta and United. Has American Airlines made a statement? That's a real question. I don't know.
I don't know either.
But unite the world. Their mission is to unite the world.
Unite the world. What?
Crazy sounding.
It's so crazy. You know, anybody who got up on any television set in America and issued those words, my mission is to unite the world, you'd immediately start looking over at the stage manager and saying, let's get this guy off of here, right? You'd
cut this guy's mic.
Yeah, cut this guy's mic. Our mission is to unite the world. Unite the world. Who's running United Airlines?
What you're saying is there's a weird malady of some sort running through corporate America.
Yes.
And it is fear. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that a lot of these executives, they don't believe this stuff. They are afraid of something, the woke mob, some sort of repercussions if they don't get on board right now. And that's what you're seeing operate. That's what President Biden is fueling. He is stoking that fear with what he said about the Georgia law, about the All-Star game. I mean, really, who cares that much about the baseball All-Star game? But it has become a huge thing. And the question is, can corporate America get past its fear at some point and just stick to what they're doing? You know, shut up and fly.
You know, baseball, exactly. Byron, this makes me sick to my stomach. I'm a hardcore Indians fan and have been since I was six. So I've been following them for 60 years, right? 60 years of Indians baseball can make you pretty indifferent to suffering because it's been mighty bad. They have not won a World Series in my lifetime. They last won it in 48. And I can't bring myself to even read this stuff. I will not buy a ticket this year. I will not buy any Tribe merch. I just won't because they're woke. And Rob Manfred, who probably is a nice guy and probably has never involved himself in reading legislation in his life, somebody persuaded him he had to brand baseball as woke. And the same thing happened to United and Delta. And I don't know who's advising these companies. This is for like the 1% of the craziest people in the country want them to do this. The rest of us just want to go from L.A. to Dulles.
Well, they probably hired lots of fairly highly paid and inclusion executives. So they've actually hired people to tell them this, who are telling them to read, I don't know, Ibram X. Kendi's books. They're telling them to read something. And they're afraid of what is going on now, of facing a boycott, facing some sort of adverse reaction if they're not on board.
But if you walk into the middle of a gunfight in the old movie, The OK Corral, the Undertaker would go into his store, right? All the merchants would close up for business. So saloon keeper would close the door. They'd get out of the way when the eight guys are in the street walking towards each other. So you don't run into the middle of the street and say, shoot me.
You know, that's a good point. I haven't thought about shootout at the OK Corral in relation to this. I've simply not thought about that. But listen, one of the reasons the little green shoots that I was talking about, Politico Playbook, now a couple of days ago, did a story about the dangers of overhyping the election laws. Nate Cohn did a story in the New York Times about, you know, these laws don't really affect turnout that much. You can states have passed laws for a long time concerning voting, and you can look at the results afterwards. And by the way, we know that turnout has been increasing quite a bit over the last several years. It's the worst voter suppression in the world because turnout is
at all-time high. So where did they move the All-Star game to? They moved it to the dope capital of the world.
Moved it to Denver.
Yeah, so you can get stoned and go to the game. And you can probably carry a gun. I don't know what the open carry laws are in Denver, but in Colorado, there's a lot of open carry.
I do wonder now, Major League Baseball has taken this position. Why does it apply just to the All-Star game? I mean, there is a team in Georgia. There's a Major League Baseball team in Georgia. It has games that are scheduled in Atlanta, and all the other National League teams have games that are scheduled in Atlanta to play the Georgia football team, as we would call it in Washington.
And I guarantee you, Byron, back to Augusta, you get the membership lift of Augusta, and you begin to look at how many women are there and how many minorities, and you're going to be in single digits. Single digits. So why is Rob Manfred a member of Augusta? It is a legitimate question.
Well, it's a huge sports event taking place this week, by the way, the Masters, in Georgia. But the Masters has been the target of protest in the past. Remember, they did not, many years ago, probably in the 90s, they did not have any women members.
Right. They had to let Condi Rice, who's a heck of a golfer, Condi Rice can beat most of the membership. She joined. And they probably have a few others, but it's not 50%.
No. Good Lord, no. and also, it doesn't matter. They're holding a sports event in Georgia.
In Georgia. And Rob Manfred belongs to it, and ABC's going to, or CBS is going to televise it, and the commissioner of football is going, and there will be United Airline hospitality tent there. I guarantee it. And 95% of the people playing golf are going to be white men. And there aren't going to be any women. What are they thinking? So, Byron, your optimism is misplaced. Follow me at ByronYork.com on Twitter. Follow me to the next segment. Stands on golden sand. Welcome back, America. You hear what that music means. Admiral James Stavridis is with us, retired United States Navy Admiral, former Allied Supreme Commander of NATO. One of the best speakers I've ever heard, so if you're looking for someone to address you virtually or in person, you ought to go to, are you with Washington Speakers Bureau, Admiral?
I am, Hugh.
Washington Speakers Bureau, or just go to stavridis.com, and you'll, or Admiral Stav. What's your website? I forget every time.
AdmiralStav.com. S-T-A-V.
That's pretty easy.
Admiral Stav.
That's pretty easy. All right, two stories for you, Admiral. 10 Chinese military aircraft entered Taiwan's air defense identification zone on Monday, April 5, marking the third intrusion this month. That's story number one. Story number two, China sent an aircraft carrier and five escort ships, including a destroyer likened to the U.S. Navy's Aegis-class vessels, through the Miyako Strait near Okinawa over the weekend. What say you, Admiral?
These are two interrelated stories, and even as we focus on China and its push against Taiwan, which, of course, is merely a follow-on to the crackdown in Hong Kong, you've got to kind of think, well, what's the next step in the game? And it's not just the South China Sea, Hugh. It's the East China Sea. Another body of water, if you will, to the north of China. And, of course, the press there is against Japan. So we see, on the one hand, China flying very provocatively into the ADIZ, in the Air Defense Interrogation Zone, Identification Zone. That's directed against Taiwan. On the other hand, this carrier battle group, which is what we would call it in the U.S. Navy, is sailing in between Japanese islands directed toward Japan. As you know, Japan and China have a significant dispute in the East China Sea over these Senkaku Islands, as the Japanese call them. Chinese call them the Diu Islands. That is a second-order challenge, but the two fit together as part of the ongoing Chinese maritime expansion of its power. They're demonstrating both to Taiwan and to Japan, stand by, we own and operate in these waters.
I want to pause for a moment on the Senkaku Islands, because we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of the reversion of Okinawa to Japan, presided over by President Nixon this summer. When Okinawa reverted to Japan, so did the Senkaku Islands. Though we did not sign anything saying so officially, that was the intent. The People's Republic of China has exploited that ambiguity to say, oh, no, 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 they're in the nine dash line. They belong to us. No one actually is there. But when you were the Supreme Allied Commander, was the Senkaku Island Japan's in your mind, or did it was it disputed territory? What did you think about it when you were the boss?
It's a 100% Japanese territory, and the U.S. has always stood behind that. There might have been some ambiguity 30 years ago about whether we considered them part of the treaty guarantee, whether we would, in effect, go to war if China invaded the Senkakus. That ambiguity was ended in the Obama administration and then in the Trump administration, both the two most recent presidents and now President Biden just several weeks ago. All three of the last American presidents, bipartisan, have said the Senkaku Islands are part of Japan, therefore they fall under our mutual defense treaty. That's a very big deal. The question is, these are nine really small little islands. Why the heck would China want them? And the answer is, as usual, oil, gas, fishing rights. If China owns them, they own 200 miles around them under the law of the sea for an exclusive economic zone. That's why China wants them. It's all part of the plan to consolidate the South China Sea and the East China Sea.
I think I mentioned to you last week, a senior East Asian diplomat told me if they get Taiwan, Okinawa is next, but the stepping stones would be the Senkaku, and that they might go for Senkaku first as a way of probing reaction on Taiwan. But I want to go back to these incursions. I can't do this story every week because people won't know what week it is, but I did it last week. I'm doing it again because the Chinese Communist Party, the People's Liberation Army, Navy, they keep doing it in order to make it not a story, right, Admiral? They're normalizing their behavior. To what end?
In order to be capable of having ships and aircraft forward in a response that makes us feel as though, as you just said, that's normal. Therefore, they can maintain these platforms forward. Therefore, when and if the moment comes when they decide to actually strike Taiwan, they'll have forces forward and will simply say up to that point, oh, my gosh, that's kind of normal behavior for them. The danger here, obviously, is that we lose our capacity to respond each and every time. When I say we, it's Taiwanese forces who have to do that, but U.S. forces who have to train, equip, help them with responses, intelligence, oversight. All of that is something the United States should be doing, because if we don't do it, we're going to end up being very comfortable with Chinese forces operating extensively. That would put us way on the back foot in the case of a significant conflict.
And Admiral, I think that's much more difficult, is it not, than a static border like North Korea, South Korea. There you plant 1,000 troops and they're a tripwire, or East Germany, West Germany. Whenever there's a static border, it's pretty easy to decide whether or not your opponent, your enemy, is violating it is North Korea will periodically, over the decades, send over 20 people and they have an axe-wielding match at the border. We all know about it. I think the PRC is simply normalizing us so we do not notice when 10 becomes 20 and 20 becomes 40 and 40 becomes 100 and their ships are cruising between Okinawa and Japan. I mean, that was really startling to me.
Indeed. And let's reflect that it's also occurring in the Himalayas at the top of the world, where not axe welding, but knife wielding and club wielding Chinese soldiers are attacking Indian troops up there. So this is really part of a Chinese strategy to show that they are assertive, that they will take what they believe is theirs, and they will continue to push. This is why it's all the more important. We were talking about Japan and the United States, who have a mutual defense treaty. We also have one with Australia, and it becomes very important to fold India into that arrangement. As you know, this is sometimes called the Quad, not to be confused with the Squad on Capitol Hill. The Quad are the four nations, U.S., Australia, India, and Australia, who stand against China with Japan.
Oh, he froze up on me there, Admiral.
In the Quad.
Okay, there you are. You're cutting it out a little bit. You've had a disturbance in the force in Florida. Did a hurricane hit? Are you back? There, you're back.
Oops,
now.
Sorry.
There you go.
I hope I got through the Quad. Four nations that are working together.
You did. Now, in 2034, your novel of the next war with China, you left Japan, Australia, and India. Well, you didn't leave India out of it, but you left Australia and Japan out of it. In reality, there's no leaving those three on the one side, right? They're all looking at the Taiwanese. They're all part of the same tapestry of movements. Are they coordinated in their response? Are their navies working together?
They absolutely are. They work together annually in something called Operation Malabar, which is a series of exercises conducted in the Indian Ocean. Japan, Australia, United States alongside India in the Indian Ocean. That's an annual exercise. We're seeing more and more of that kind of exercising between these four navies. And the reason we left them out of the book, frankly, remember, 2034 is a cautionary tale. And if we don't tend the garden of these alliances, they are going to drift away from us. So part of the storyline is, how did we end up in 2034 without Japan, without Australia? India is playing a very independent role. We need to avoid that. That's part of the cautionary tale built into 2034.
Do these other maritime powers run the same sort of thing we do, which is freedom of the sea missions, where we penetrate beyond the nine dash line that doesn't exist, that is fake, but nevertheless, the Chinese declare it to be so? Does Australia run its ships through there? Does Japan? Does India?
So far, they have not joined officially as stated members of the Freedom of Navigation patrols. On the other hand, interestingly, our European allies have. The British, the French, even the Germans are conducting these Freedom of Navigation patrols alongside us and declaring them Freedom of Navigation patrols. In the good news category, the nations you mentioned, India, Australia, Japan, are operating their warships in and out. They're simply not formally stating, hey, this is a freedom of navigation patrol. But they regard the South China Sea, just as the United States does, as high seas, as international waters, where a warship can go, it can operate its aircraft, it can fire its guns, it can do whatever a warship needs or wants to do in international waters. So all of us pitching in together to make the point to China that you don't own this vast body of water. As you know, Hugh, the South China Sea is half the size of the United States of America. It's enormous. We can't just flip the car keys to the Chinese and say, yeah, you own it.
Last question, Admiral. If you were up in D.C., I would ask you to walk down the hall at the Carlyle Group, where you were a consulting member, and find Glenn Youngkin he's running for governor right now, or somebody else, and ask them what this means. It's from the Financial Times today, and it says, Wall Street Journal, China creates its own digital currency, a first for a major economy. So they're going into the Bitcoin business. What's that tell you?
It tells me that cryptocurrencies are edging closer and closer to becoming broadly regarded as investment vehicles. They're already used for payments. And what is next going to happen is sovereign nations are going to want to control it. And so I'd be cautious about over-purchasing any cryptocurrency, because at some point, sovereign nations are going to swoop in, take these things over, and there are going to be unintended, strange outcomes as a result of that. China's made the first move here. I think it will not be too long before you see the United States and other nations move in to try and regulate these cryptocurrencies.
That's what I wanted to elicit from you without setting the table. They've done it. We have to do it, don't we?
I think we do. And it's part of a larger strategic move here is we need to have a national plan for artificial intelligence, cryptocurrency, cybersecurity. It's a big chunk of thinking that we have not done yet. We ought to have a future conversation about that.
Admiral Stav, we will do so. Go to AdmiralStav.com. His best-selling novel, 2034, a novel of the next war. Go and get it. Bestseller. Congratulations, Admiral. And I'll be right back, America. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. There are some stories which are easy to understand. Derek Chauvin, quote, absolutely violated Minneapolis Police Department policies, according to the Minneapolis Police Department head yesterday. That's easy to understand. What's hard to understand are the stories where we bring in Sungmin Kim from the Washington Post. The one about the Senate parliamentarian ruling in favor of the Senate majority leader to change reconciliation rules. Sungmin Kim, you get to explain that to 6 million people. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me, Hugh.
Good morning.
So basically, what we understand the Senate parliamentarian ruling to be is that you can basically revise the budget resolution that the Senate and the House has already passed to use reconciliation again. That seems to be the interpretation from Elizabeth McDonough. What I think was really, which has significant implications, because that means there are more times when the Senate can pass legislation with just a simple majority of votes rather than 60 votes that most legislation requires. So if the interpretation is all correct, that is a big deal for Biden, that's a big deal for Senate Majority Leader Schumer. But one thing to remember in all of this is this phrase in the Schumer spokesman's statement yesterday, where he said that there are still some parameters that need to be worked out. So that, to me, is kind of like this big asterisk, and I want to know what those parameters are that would allow reconciliation to be used again to pass legislation, because it's not necessarily just this big $2.25 trillion infrastructure bill that Democrats want to pass rapidly that's not likely to get Republican votes. There's also the so-called human infrastructure plan that the Biden administration has indicated they will roll out later this month. And there's also there's a lot of agitation among advocacy groups to use immigration under reconciliation. So it'll be really interesting and really important to see that fine print of the parliamentarian's ruling in the coming days.
Now, the parliamentarian the last time around ruled that the minimum wage could not be attached to reconciliation. And reconciliation just means a category of laws that have to do with raising taxes and spending money. That's what reconciliation. There's a category of laws not subject to the filibuster, and it happens usually once a year. And that once a year includes a votorama. It includes two votoramas, actually. It's kind of an exhausting process. And I expected to have two reconciliations, and that's usually pretty hard to muster everyone's attention span. At the end of the day, I think this means that if they stay within whatever those parameters are, they can do it as often as they want. It also means that when the Republicans get back the presidency, the Senate, and the House, they can do so as well, Sungmin Kim. That's what the untold story is. It's one set of rules. Once you change the rules, Harry Reid found out they changed the rules for Mitch McConnell, and he was much more disciplined about it when it came to judges.
Right. I mean, that's just how the Senate works. It's a chamber that operates on precedent. So once you change the precedent when it comes to legislation, budget bills, nominations, then future majorities can certainly take advantage of that. And you saw how that worked you know, most notably when you know, as you just discussed, Harry Reid went nuclear on most nominations in 2013, and Republicans took advantage of that once they took back the majority and came back in the majority in early 2015. So it is certainly something that Republicans are watching to see what they can do if and when they return to the majority in subsequent elections.
Now, my question to you, you're a veteran of both the White House and the Senate. Joe Manchin has said he's not for a 28% corporate tax hike. He's only going to go up to 25%. So that's the limit. Where are the other Democrats? Kristen Sinema is often mentioned as being a moderate, which kind of surprises me, but maybe she is. I expect Angus King is kind of a moderate because he was a governor. He knows you just can't print money endlessly. Who else is a moderate in that caucus? Often Chris Coons is thought to be. He is on international security affairs and human rights. But where are the other fiscal, quote, moderates in the Democratic caucus?
Chris Coons is definitely has been considered a moderate. But remember, his new role right now is Biden's top ally in the Senate.
Right.
He's so close to the president. So he's going to be a chief kind of strategist for the president of sorts on Capitol Hill and kind of helping to push his agenda through. But you should also remember Senator Mark Warner of Virginia. That's another kind of person to watch in the mod squad, if you will. And he actually told reporters yesterday on Capitol Hill that he has raised some concerns about this infrastructure package to the White House. He didn't outline for reporters what exactly those concerns were, but we could imagine that perhaps he believes the corporate tax rate is going back up too high, and perhaps he's seeking for seeking a lower figure, or that he is worried about the level of spending, even if it is offset by tax hikes. So he's definitely another person to watch in the coming.
What about Maggie Hassan, who has to run against maybe Chris Sununu in tax-hating New Hampshire? Is she one of those?
Maggie Hassan is definitely another person to watch. She's in that group of 20, 10 Republican, 10 Democratic senators seeking a compromise. So she's definitely someone to watch as well.
We'll keep watching your byline. Sungmin Kim of The Washington Post, thank you. I'm coming right back. America, don't go anywhere. Tom Cotton joins me in the next hour. Don't miss that. The fact is the Internet never forgets. There has never been a more important time to protect your internet activity, your digital data. That's why I urge you to get ExpressVPN. Everything you search for, watch, or click online can be tracked back to you by big tech companies, and they do it. They match your activity to your true identity using your device's unique IP address. That's why you need to switch, and I switch, to ExpressVPN on your computer, on your phone. Every IP address is masked by a secure VPN server, which makes it harder for websites to identify me. Plus, you can use ExpressVPN on up to 5 devices simultaneously. That's why they're rated the number one VPN by CNET and Wired. So stop handing over your data to big tech companies. Go with the VPN I trust for online protection. Visit expressvpn.com/Hewitt. to get 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Hewitt. To get 3 extra months for free, go to expressvpn.com/Hewitt right now to learn more. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, joined by United States Senator Tom Cotton. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be on with you. I hope the Hewitt family and all of your listeners had a blessed Easter weekend.
We did indeed, and they're mourning at Gonzaga, but they're celebrating throughout Texas this morning. Never, ever, Senator Cotton, let yourself get on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Will you promise me that?
I don't think with my sports abilities these days I'm at risk of being on the cover of any sporting magazine.
Yeah, you and me both. I got it. By the way, speaking of sports, if you had to name the least woke place in America, wouldn't it be Augusta National Golf Course?
Well, that's only if Rob Manfred does what he should do if he wants to stick by his virtue signaling via his job, which is not only refuse to attend the Masters tournament this week, but also resign his membership at Augusta to continue his boycott of Georgia and, frankly, encourage Augusta to replace him with a woman or a minority.
Now, absolutely.
That Rob Manfred will be a little more discerning and a little more deliberate when it comes to his own preferences and his own comforts and his own prestige with his membership at Augusta than he was with the institution he leads, Major League Baseball.
Now, they've also gone to the dub capital of the world. They have moved the Major League Baseball to Colorado, which they think of as woke because of their dope policy. But I don't think he's looked at their open carry laws in Colorado much. The anti-gun people are not going to like that one. I mean, you can't win with woke.
Well, also, Hugh, so it is true that Colorado is a very strong Second Amendment state. But also, if I'm not mistaken, Hugh, I think it takes a photo ID to vote in person in Colorado.
It does.
I don't know what version of Jim Crow this is, but, you know, according to Joe Biden and Stacey Abrams, Georgia is responsible for Jim Crow 2.0. So I think Delaware, Joe Biden's state, must be Jim Crow 3.0 since they don't have any early voting, and they got many fewer drop boxes than Georgia does now. And I think they require photo ID. So I guess Colorado would be Jim Crow 4.0 by the Democrats' ridiculous standards.
It is, and I noticed that the leader, McConnell, and other Republicans are out there saying, this isn't going to fly. Corporate America, and United Airlines went woke today, too. I don't know what's up with United Airlines. I don't boycott people. I just make choices when I can make. I don't have to buy Major League Baseball tickets and equipment and merch. I'm not going to. I don't have to fly Delta, except in rare cases. I'm not going to. I'm going to fly a different. That just impacts my choice, and it's too bad because most people I know working for the airlines, the pilots and the stewards, they are very center right. I mean, I get so many people talking to me on airlines. I do not know what's going on at headquarters, but it is not the people who fly and attend to me on the airplane.
So, Hugh, I think there's a couple things going on with these politically correct corporations and CEOs. One is they're responding to their fears. A lot of these companies, I would point out, have deep ties to the Chinese Communist Party because they want access to the Chinese market or they want to outsource jobs there. So Delta is in partnership with a Chinese communist-owned airline. And Coca-Cola, of all things, was aggressively lobbying last year in Congress against a bill to punish China for its use of slave labor by religious minorities. And Major League Baseball is increasingly entwined with the communist regime in China and, of course, has long been entwined with the communist regime in Cuba. And they're scared of those communists in those countries because they know that they will cut them off. I think they're also scared of the radical left-wing mobs in America because they know that those mobs, both inside their companies and outside their companies, will target them for campaigns of harassment and boycott and so forth. So I think they're responding to their cowardly fears. Now, Hugh, one way to counteract that pressure inside these companies is for conservative employees to make their voices heard. As you said, there are thousands and thousands of conservative Republicans who work for Delta, American, and United. And I've met dozens of them over the years who have recognized me when I'm flying back and forth from Arkansas to Washington, gate agents, pilots, flight attendants. You know, they thank me for my service in the Senate. They said they support what I'm trying to accomplish. They even, Hugh, committed what the left-wing mob would view as a cardinal sin of saying they supported Donald Trump as well.
Yep.
So these CEOs, you know, like the Coke CEO and Delta CEO, sitting in their gleaming headquarters in Atlanta, surrounded by social justice MBAs straight out of the Ivy League, hear all the time from their left-wing employees. So if you're a mechanic at Delta, or you're a factory worker at Coca-Cola, or you're a pilot at Delta, you should just send off an email. Send an email to your CEO. Send an email to your chief diversity officer and tell them what you think about these things. And more to the point, if you work at other companies that haven't taken these steps but are being pressured to take these steps, you should make your voice heard. Make sure that your CEO knows that he doesn't speak for all of his employees when he takes the far left position on these issues.
Now, I'd like to suggest that you work with one of your old law professors. I know that Elizabeth Warren was your law professor, right? And she was a pretty good professor. And
much better professor than she is a senator.
Exactly.
She'd probably say I was a much better student than I am a senator, and I wasn't a very good student than you.
I'm sure that's a bit, but I mean, you do have the HLS together, and you ought to go down and sit down and talk about shareholder rights. And let's see if we can't get a suit available to shareholders who are looking at United today and seeing their very woke 2.0 statement about our mission is to unite the world. I thought their mission was to get me from L.A. to D.C., but they've expanded their mission to save the world. Can't you and Senator Warren sit down and write some shareholder protection against the politicization of corporate America?
Well, I'm not sure that Liz Warren has much interest in protecting shareholders or anyone else who owns a single asset in America, if you look at some of the Democrats'
tax spending
plans. But I will say this to you, that another point is, who cares what all these CEOs think? Who appointed them moral arbiters of our political order? I mean, these CEOs run an airline. They sell sugary beverages. They run a credit card company. They run a drug company. They're not the Pope. They're not a bishop. They're not head of a Protestant convention. They certainly didn't put their name on the ballot and ask their fellow citizens to elect them to help make laws to govern our country. They are business executives, and they have no special claim to knowledge or moral virtue any more than those mechanics or pilots or flight attendants or gate agents who are conservative Republicans. So how about they just stick to doing their job as opposed to expressing uninformed, politically correct decisions about how we should order political affairs in our country?
Well, I agree with that. I also have a theory as to why they're acting this way, Senator. If you saw the 60 Minutes attempted hit on Ron DeSantis, another Harvard Law graduate, it teaches you, one, don't go after a Harvard Law graduate who's got the microphone. It also teaches you, number two, it would be better if Piggly Wiggly were in Florida, because then it would have been funnier. Have you got Piggly Wiggly in Arkansas?
We do have a few Piggly Wigglies, not many. It's you know, Piggly Wiggly is more of a kind of a Southeast franchise. So in the southern and eastern parts of Arkansas, we have a few.
Wouldn't it have been great if the 60 Minutes reporter had said, we have a pay-for-play scandal involving Piggly Wiggly? It would have just been hilarious. But
it would have been amusing to hear some 60 Minutes correspondents having to say Piggly Wiggly dozens of times over.
I know. They're so self-important. It was hilarious. And DeSantis took them apart with a scalpel, and then they ran it anyway. It was though they thought nobody will notice that we've edited. I mean, what do you make of a network that is that deeply in the thrall of a narrative that they will make it up?
Well, you know, that's a lot of where the deep blue media has gone over the last 5 years. And Donald Trump's departure from Washington certainly hasn't changed any. You know, some of the things we've been discussing, you are questions not even being asked. You know, where's the New York Times? Where's CNN asking Rob Manfred if he's going to resign his membership at Augusta National and make his boycott of Georgia personal, not just convenient through his corporation? Where are they asking the Coke CEO if, for instance, he's lobbying Boris Johnson in his native country to have any kind of early voting? So they diminish stories they don't like. If they can't find stories that are critical of conservatives, sometimes they'll just make stories up.
And they did that at 60 Minutes. I got to ask you about the reconciliation ruling yesterday. I began the show by pointing out we have a $28 trillion debt, which is 133% of the GDP. In 1980, it was 35% of the GDP. Now we have given Chuck Schumer the keys to the kingdom. How significant is yesterday's ruling by the parliamentarian, or do you think maybe we're getting one side of the story?
Well, Hugh, I think that sound you hear all across America is people turning the dial to the right when you start talking about Senate floor procedure. But I will say this could be important. That is true, because procedure can often lead to genuine results in the law. I will say this. We certainly only heard one side of the story. Chuck Schumer put out a statement last night purporting to represent what our parliamentarian had told him about the ability to pass multiple bills at a simple majority threshold without 60 votes related to taxes and spending. Typically, the way this works is the parliamentarian will work with the two sides, and they'll go through negotiations and arguments, almost like not quite a courtroom argument, but let's say arbitration, and then she'll provide a ruling to both sides. Sometimes that's made public, sometimes it's not. So until we actually know what our parliamentarian has said, until we understand the exact contours of it, I think it's premature to reach definitive conclusions based solely on Chuck Schumer's press release. I will say this, though, Hugh. Chuck Schumer's effort to try to get multiple bites at the taxing and spending apple just shows you, one, how unpopular their agenda is, because they don't even try to get Republican support for it, and two, the fact that they want more of your money, so they can spend more of your money. And that's the Democratic ambition, and that's the base. That's the essence of their agenda.
Is there no center left? And I mean, Joe Manchin is holding the line. Is it just Joe Manchin between us and a $50 trillion debt? Is he the only thing left?
I don't think he's the only thing, at least not right now. I mean, you kind of saw on the minimum wage issue when the rubber hit the road last month, and there was finally a vote on Bernie Sanders' $15 an hour minimum wage, that eight Democrats voted against it, even though only two Democrats have been outspoken against it. So there may be more division and more fear inside the Democratic caucus than is apparent, based on pursuing the very unpopular policies of Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders.
Last question. Does anyone talk about the danger of inflation? Senator, you weren't even born, I don't think, when I bought my first house for 12.5% interest rate over a 30-year. Honestly, do they not know what inflation does to people?
So I think a lot of people in Washington, Hugh, believe that inflation has been predicted 9 of the last 2 times it occurred, and especially since the 2007-2008 recession, that people have been predicting inflation and it hasn't happened. What worries me now is that it's not just potential increased demand and increased money supply, but there are still significant supply constraints, Hugh, and that's those are circumstances that are more ripe for inflation than we've seen in 14 years. I mean, anyone who's trying to buy a home or remodel a home right now knows that prices are sky high, that delays are very long because you can't get lumber, you can't get copper, you can't even get tar for the roof, and that is magnified across every sector of the economy as we're still dealing with the supply shocks of the shutdowns of the last year and the coronavirus's impact on manufacturing and production. So at a time when you have increasing demand as we come out of those shutdowns and the money supply is growing and stagnant or even decreasing supply in many vital goods, the conditions are ripe for inflation. I hope we don't have that. One way to make sure we don't have it is for Congress not to have another $2 trillion budget blowout.
I hope people heard that. I'm going to print that. I'm going to post that. Thank you, Senator Cotton. Have a good day. Stop by Piggly Wiggly on your way north.